4. Martin, Philip, Britt the Younger, and Gwen flew in a lopsided V formation, like a flying checkmark. Even though wind resistance meant little to the wizards in terms of energy expenditure, less wind made for a more pleasant flight, and taking a cue from geese made flying at high speed more fun for everyone, except whoever was flying in the lead. In this case, Martin. They came in low over the forest canopy, then slowed as they reached a zone of dead trees and scorched earth that thinned into a clearing by the base of a granite cliff. Martin calibrated his speed and angle of descent in such a way as to drift into a cave about 20 feet up the cliff wall, shaped like a screaming skull. He decelerated smoothly, landing at the back of the cave at Gary's doorstep. Or at least he would have if he hadn't been forced to come to an abrupt stop. In the dim light inside the cave, he saw a person sitting, slumped, with his back to Gary's door. Britt, Gwen, and Philip nearly crashed into Martin's back, but they all managed to stop with great effort and much muttered cursing. Martin peered through the dim light at the figure on the doorstep.
"Who is that?" he asked.
He inhaled tentatively through his nose.
"Hubert? What are you doing here?"
"Learning the mystic arts from my master."
Hubert, the town of Ledchurch's apprentice dung sifter, said. From inside the door, Gary shouted,
"No, you're not!"
Gwen asked,
"Who's your master?"
Hubert jerked a filthy thumb back over his shoulder toward the door.
"The necromancer, that fearsome mystical warrior known to man and demon alike as Gary."
"No!"
Gary shouted from inside.
"I'm not eating you, squat!"
Philip crouched down to address Hubert closer to his own eye level, and in the hopes that the warm, fragrant air coming off of Hubert was rising.
"Hubert, what is it you think Gary is teaching you by refusing to let you into his house and insisting that he won't teach you anything?"
"He's teaching me the importance of humility and patience."
"So, things that Gary himself doesn't know,"
Gwen muttered. Britt the Younger shouted through the door,
"That means he figures you're gonna let him inside eventually."
"I'm not!"
Gary shouted.
Martin asked, "Do you plan to let us in?"
Gary opened the door. Hubert's eyes grew wide with horror and fascination at the sight of him, with his black robe and hat, his skeletal prosthetic leg, and his face hidden by a full gas mask. Gary pointed down at Hubert.
"You! Get out of my friend's way!"
"Yes, master!"
Hubert scuttled like a crab away from the door, then kneeled, looking up with reverence. Gary kept his eyes on Hubert as he held the door open wide. Once all of the wizards had entered, Hubert said,
"Oh, wait to do your bidding, master."
Gary snarled,
"Good, then go home."
"Already done, master, my home is by your side."
Gary slammed the door shut.
"How'd that happen?"
Martin asked as they all walked through the ceremonial antechamber where Gary performed magic for any locals who came to him for help. They passed through the circular cave, past the many torches and the stone altar holding an immense, ancient-looking, leather-bound book, which concealed a mid-90s trackball power book. Gary took off his gas mask and led his guests to the door at the far side of the chamber.
"I don't know. He found that old Gene Simmons action figure of mine and thought it gave him magical powers. I guess he got the bug. Now he wants more."
Gary opened the far door, revealing his actual home, a haven of off-white walls and beige carpets. It was clear that he had tried very hard to make his place look nice, but had no idea what nice looked like. It was a home that was fast and easy to tidy up, but would be next to impossible to actually clean. Gary asked,
"So why'd you fly in? You said you were gonna teleport."
Gwen walked to one of Gary's two giant brown recliners. They'd come as a set, with a matching giant brown sectional, and were large enough to hold two well-acquainted people if they each scooched far to the sides. Gwen looked Martin in the eye and planted herself directly in the middle of the seat. The chairs and the couch faced a faux wood grain rectangle of pressboard slabs, holding multiple electronic devices tethered to a massive Sony Trinitron from the days when having a large flat-screen TV meant owning a huge, heavy box containing a massive glass vacuum tube, the 32-inch front of which was flat. The TV was tethered to a series of dusty black boxes by a series of tangled black cords. Once settled, Gwen pointed to the corner of the main room where people materialized when they used Gary's pre-programmed teleportation algorithm. In it sat a plastic backyard kiddie pool full of some gray liquid.
"What's that, Gary?"
A guilty smile crept across Gary's face.
"Wet concrete. I've enchanted it to harden as soon as any solid object appears in it."
"Any solid object? Like our feet?"
"That's one example."
"Yeah, well, that's why we didn't teleport in."
"Fair enough. I got Jeff and Roy anyway. They should be back any minute. Chiseling their feet free shouldn't take long. And Tyler hasn't arrived yet. Should I remove the concrete?"
Martin said,
"You know what we're gonna say."
"Of course not," Gary asked. "Of course not,"
Martin said. He opened the refrigerator and found it fully stocked, with beverages and condiments. He grabbed a beer, closed the door, twisted off the bottle cap, and threw it into the garbage can, which was full of empty beverage and condiment containers. A bluish light filled the room. Everyone's attention turned as Jeff and Roy materialized, hovering 2 feet above the kiddie pool full of concrete. Their shoes had a dirty gray cast about them, and the hems of their robes hung straight down, still weighted by small chunks of concrete stuck to the fabric. On Jeff's wool robe, the gray stains looked incongruous. Roy, on the other hand, wore a trench coat and a modified fedora for his wizard uniform, so the cement stains looked appropriate and gave the impression he'd narrowly escaped angry mobsters.
"Was the concrete hard to get rid of?"
Gary asked, obviously hoping the answer was yes. Jeff said,
"It wasn't as unpleasant for us to remove as it will be for you when you find where we put it."
He and Roy floated to the edge of the waiting pool, dropped to the floor, and walked to empty spots on the sectional, leaving dusty gray footprints.
Guys, do you think I could get you to take off your shoes and put them by the door?"
Gary asked.
Roy growled,
"No, I don't. You got a lot of nerve complaining, embedding our shoes in concrete, then complaining that we're tracking concrete into your house."
Gwen said,
"He's got a point, Gary. Besides, there's not really much anyone can do to mess this place up."
Gary said,
"Thank you."
Jeff shook his head.
"Gary, that was an insult."
Gwen said, "No, Gary, I'm sorry. I didn't mean anything by that. Sure, your place is a bit rough around the edges and through the middle. Really, it's one homogeneous slab of roughness, but it suits you."
"Thank you,"
Gary said.
"That was also an insult," Jeff said.
Roy touched down and walked to the dining area, which housed a matching set of chairs and a glass-topped table, of the kind meant to grace a retiree's patio, complete with a hole in the table's center designed to accommodate a large umbrella. He nodded to Martin and Philip, but removed his hat to the ladies.
"Hello, Gwen. Hello, Britt. It's good to see you again today."
This confused Britt.
"I'm sorry?"
Jeff said,
"No, Roy, that was Britt the Elder who came over. This is Britt the Younger."
Roy shrugged.
"Still, they're the same person, so we have seen her twice today."
Jeff gritted his teeth.
"It would kill you to be wrong, wouldn't it?"
"I'll let you know if it ever happens. Why did Britt the Elder go see you?"
Philip asked.
"She had some technical questions," Jeff said. "Stuff about the dragons and what I learned trying to manipulate living things in the shell."
"Mostly not to do it?"
Gwen asked.
"Exactly," Jeff said.
"That answer didn't make her happy,"
Roy said.
"Poor thing. She seemed pretty strung out. Not just tired, but upset too. I'm thinking maybe I should go over to her place and see if she needs some support."
"What kind of support?" Philip asked.
Roy shrugged.
"You know, comforting.
I don't know if that's a good idea."
"And I don't know if that's any of your business, Philip. I mean, you always say that you don't believe she and Britt the Younger here are the same person. So the way I see it, dating Britt the Younger gives you no say in Britt the Elder's affairs."
"It doesn't actually give him any say over my affairs either," Britt the Younger said.
"Right,"
Roy agreed.
And if you're wrong, and they are the same person, by the time she becomes Britt the Elder, you don't seem to be in the picture anymore.
But I am, Britt the Younger said, because I am convinced that we are the same person, and I say, leave her alone. If she needs help, let her ask for it. I hate people meddling in my affairs, so when it comes to hers, which are going to be mine eventually, I say we all stay out of it.
Martin asked,
but by making that decision for her, aren't you meddling in her affairs? The affairs are either hers, mine, or both, depending on how you look at it, but none of it's any of your business, so drop it, okay?
At that moment, the entire group heard a quiet splash and a loud burst of energetic swearing. They all turned to see Tyler, the last wizard to arrive and the only African-American man in medieval England, standing ankle deep in the kiddie pool full of hardened concrete. He tried to pull his staff free, straining mightily, but it would not budge. He continued swearing, first at the concrete, then at Gary, then at himself for trusting Gary and not anticipating the concrete. Tyler teleported away, leaving the empty kiddie pool behind. Almost immediately he rematerialized, minus the large disc of concrete that had been fixed to his feet.
"So he got you," Philip said. "Don't let it ruin your night."
"I'm mad at myself for not seeing it coming," Tyler said. "But I'm much, much madder at Gary for being such a turd."
Tyler turned his attention to Gary.
"Okay, we're all here. Three of us are angry. Why don't we just get started?"
Gary stood and held his arms out wide.
"Yes, let us begin. Welcome, one and all, to our weekly movie night. As the host, I get to pick the movie. This week's selection is Blade Runner."
Philip said,
"Haven't we all seen that?"
Roy said,
"I haven't. What's it about? A guy who runs with scissors?"
"No,"
Gary said.
"And while the rest of you have seen it, which version have you seen? The original, with the narration that the producers made the director put in, or the later version where the director took the narration out?"
"And added a scene to completely change the whole point of the movie,"
Tyler said.
"Or the even later version, when they restored the film so it would look good on DVD."
"Or the version after that," Martin said, "where they remastered it again and redid a few of the scenes to look better at high resolution."
"Or," Jeff asked, "the even later one where the original producers put the narration back in, huh?"
Britt wrinkled her nose like she smelled something bad.
"They did that?"
Jeff shrugged.
"They do eventually. Ridley Scott released his director's cut to make Blade Runner fit his original vision. The producers released their cut to make it fit their original vision, which was for the film to earn them as much profit as possible."
Gary said,
"There's no reason we only have to watch one version. I was thinking we could watch all of them. It's a marathon."
Roy said,
"Who'd want to do that? Watch the same movie three times, looking for minor differences? Like it's a puzzle and highlights for kids? This sounds worse than when Martin made us sit through that four-hour version of Dune."
"Nothing could be worse than that," Gwen muttered.
Martin laughed.
"Gary, remind me next time it's my turn to host movie night to get the three-part basic cable Dune miniseries."
Gary said,
"Only if I don't have to attend."